hang out here at the happy hour a lot. And I was introduced to this program in San Diego County Jail. I was sitting there, I didn't know if I was gonna be going to prison. I had no idea what was gonna happen. My parents had told me that they were gonna call animal control to come get all my critters and the thrift store to get all my junk, and they were done with me. And at 46, I was desperate. I was scared, and I didn't know what in the world I was gonna do. And I'm grateful that I was torn down to that stage of that level of desperation that God granted me. What happened is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was brought into county jail. I was housed in the basement, which is where they send people, or people they send them off to prison, or they go to trial, whatever. Anyway, it's a real nice place to hang out. And that first night, they said, does anybody want to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? And there was a young lady who was there, who I had been incarcerated with before, because it wasn't my first pony ride. And she said, hey, why don't you come here and try this? And I went in there, and I listened, and I didn't hear a whole lot. These women, they smell good, they look good, and they got to leave. And I did. They shared their experience, strength, and hope, I didn't hear a lot of it. But what I did hear was a reading at the end. And that was, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We know it's only a list. And for the first time, people who have what I wanted were telling me that they didn't know what I wanted. They were telling me that this book that was written before I was born had the solution to the problem that I am trying to exist with. It was terrifying because they said I had to give up everything, and then they said I shouldn't change anything, and then they said I couldn't hang out with my old friends, and all these different things that they were telling me. But what I knew was what I had been doing for 35 years was not acceptable, and I was living in a dark hole. I had been in this apartment where I existed in the garage. I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but I had a peephole in my garage door. And I had a big wooden bar thing that went across my front door because I knew they were coming to get me. And when I got here, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I was brought to my knees by methamphetamine. And I did methamphetamine for the whole thing. I thought it was the most wonderful thing because I could drink the way I wanted to drink. And I wouldn't be as drunk as I thought I was. So the Santa Barbara County and the state of California did not think that I had an alcohol problem. They didn't think I even had a drug problem. What they thought I had was a business problem. So I didn't fit into any of the little niches that you have, the drug courts or this or that. When I walked through the rooms after being incarcerated for 93 days, I came in here on my own accord. I didn't have a court card, but what I had was that desperation. And I had the voices in my head of a gentleman named Bob, a woman named Karen, and another gentleman named Chuck for the SOP program. And on the day of my release, Chuck met me at the door. He was walking out, and he was walking out one door, and I was standing there, and I had my big old bag of stuff, because I'd been there a long time, and you collect a lot of stuff in jail. And he made me smoke my cigarette, looking at jail, not looking out at the wonderful horizon of the beach. And he kept asking me, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What's the first thing you're going to do? And I told him, I'm going to die out. Are you gonna go to IHOP? I'm gonna go see my cats. I haven't seen them for 3 months. Yada yada. And he kept saying, "What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do?" And the voice that had been embedded in my head was, "I'm gonna go to a meeting. I'm gonna find where there's meetings closest to me. I'm gonna go to this meeting. What are you gonna do at that meeting, Sarah? I'm gonna find a temporary sponsor. I need to find somebody to help me because my thinking is broke. My thinking got me to where I was at." And it's a very dangerous place between my ears. My thinking got me kicked out of the best bartending jobs because that was my career. I chose to be a bartender. because that way I could drink professionally. And a bartender could not be an alcoholic. But he told me to get to a meeting, and I did. And I got to that meeting, and there was a woman I was sitting over. I came in that door, and there was a woman that was sitting over there, somebody that I knew from when I was out there doing my thing. And she pulled out the chair, and she said, "What took you so damn long?" I was a scared puppy. I was terrified. I was petrified. I was no longer incarcerated, and I did not know how to live. But what I did know was that the solution was in these rooms. And what happened after that was just—it was a wonderful thing of events. Like, I come from a wonderful, normal family. I had a mother and father that had been together when my father passed away. They had 63 years of marriage. I had a brother that loved me and that had no idea how to interact with me. But he was really disgusted the way that I had treated my family. And I thought that when I got out and I came into these rooms and it was like, "Mom, I'm sober. Dad, I'm sober," that I should get everything that I had freely given away. And that was their respect, and that was huge. They never stopped loving me, but they stopped liking me a long time ago. I was not invited to my brother's first wedding. He got married. I saw pictures after the fact. I was not invited to Idaho. I was not invited with his. He had two kids. I saw pictures of them. And I had to actually confess to my mother here not too long ago that until I got sober, I couldn't tell the difference between my nephews and pictures because I was not in their lives to be able to tell the difference. This program has given me this life. And yeah, I used to hate it. I would be sitting there and somebody would say, "I'm such a grateful alcoholic." Really? And today I can say that. Because if I wasn't an alcoholic, if I did not admit to my innermost self, then I could not apply those steps to my life. And those steps have saved my life. And each step has a principle. And if you don't know what they are, talk to your sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, I would recommend getting one. They aren't your boss. They're an entrusted friend. That will help guide you through the wonderful book of Alcoholics Anonymous. In recovery, my brother had gotten divorced, and his two boys, the oldest was graduating from high school, and they were home for Christmas, and I was a part of that Christmas. And I got to sit down with my nephew, and I asked my nephew, "What do you want for your graduation program?" At this time, I was working at a thrift store, and not making a lot of bank, but I put a couple quarters together, and I asked him, "What do you want for your graduation present?" "Whatever you want, I will do my best to get it for you." And he said, "I want you to be there to watch me graduate." That is a gift. And I got to be the crazy aunt. I'm his only aunt. I got to be the crazy aunt up in the stand when he graduated, and I'm up there hooting and hollering and got my little air horn and little collar things and everything else. And he waved at me and he told me, and he always do this, which is, "I love you," in sign language. And when he crossed that stage, he did that. And he says, "That was for you." My youngest nephew graduated. I got to be there for that. I got to be there for the graduations from college when they went to Boise State. And when my brother decided he found this wonderful woman, totally awesome, she's a cowgirl, taught him how to ride a horse and rope and everything else. And he asked her to marry her, and they came out here to California to get married, and he asked me to stand up. Those are the honors that I get from Alcoholics Anonymous, and I couldn't have been there. I would not have been there. When my mother had a stroke, and my father was very ill, I got to be there. I slept at my mother's bedside half the night, and when I went home, because my dad was at home alone and shouldn't be left alone, and I was going back and forth and back and forth, and my phone was blowing up because the people in Alcoholics Anonymous wanting to know, "How can we help?" How can we know? When my father passed away, I was given the gift of being able to be there and help him in the last months of his life. I got to help care for him in a way that a parent cares for a child. But it turns around where a child gets to care for the parent. I was with him as he took his last breath. And I know that I will meet him again, because this program has given me back this wonderful God that I have, that I walked away from and turned my back on. And today I know that when I look back at my life and I see that there's only one set of footprints, it's because God was carrying me. And Alcoholics Anonymous gave me back this powerful God. I'm learning things little by little. And they say the character defects. Yeah, I'm entirely ready to have God remove all those character defects. Well, I have a few of them that still stick around quite strongly. And in these rooms, I've learned that I don't always have to get up in the morning and brush my teeth with gunpowder. And the restraint of pen and tongue. This program will give you this gift that is unbelievable. Here recently, I had my triple whammy. I had holy, oh my gosh, surgery, and then I was given a gift that I never thought I would have, which would be a home, a forever home. And then I was viciously attacked by some critters. And that was all within a month. It was like, okay, God, I get this. And I look back on it now, and after I had that surgery, and I found out I was going to be able to move, all these people were like, oh, let us know if we can help. We can help. Just let me know. And my whole thing was, no, I got it. I can handle this. I'm in a neck brace, and I'm not supposed to lift anything over 10 pounds, but I'm going to move this apartment that I lived in for 20 years all by my lonesome. And my God puts on steel-toed boots sometimes to get my attention, and that's what I believe would happen. Because when I was brought down to the lowest, where it was like, okay, I can't do diddly squat. I had friends who called me up, and they didn't say, how can I help? They said, I'm going to be there whether you like it or not. Deal with it. And they suited up, they showed up, and helped me walk through emotionally one of the most traumatic things of my life, which was letting go of 20 years of crap, 10 years of drinking and tweaking in an apartment. And that behaviors. And I had stayed there for 10 years in sobriety. You know, and you just, it's like emotionally traumatic, and I got to walk through it without a drink. Do I ever think of drinking? Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. I think about it, and then I play that tape through. So if you're new or nearly new, or thinking about drinking or struggling, play through that tape, because my tape kind of goes like this. Okay, gonna go to the store, I'm gonna get that bottle, because apparently it's gonna be Jack Daniels or vodka, I don't know. Anyways, I'm gonna get the booze, then I'm gonna get the cigarettes, because you can't drink without cigarettes, and I used the 12 steps to get off the cigarettes like 5 years ago, so I gotta get those packs of cigarettes. While I'm there, I must get the multi-pack of Bic lighters, because I know where the drinking's gonna take me, and I'm gonna need that people's supply of Bic lighters. Then I'm going to have to call up a connect, or a wait a minute, I won't have the money. I know. Mom, I can't pay a bill. You got cash. That is where my one little drink will take me. And then I'll end up either in the morgue if I'm lucky, or I'll have to end up in a convalescent hospital having to have somebody change my diapers. You know, that is what the disease wants to take me, and where it wants to take me. I'm not willing to do that. I'm willing to fight for my recovery. And I was a little worried about speaking today, because the last time I had a commitment to somebody, they asked me to be their Lamaze coach.
Right?
Yeah. I'm like, yeah! Lamaze coach. Oh my gosh, I've never had a child. This was like totally huge. I got to rub her feet. Her ankles were like that big. You know, and it was just, she was having a little bit of a rough pregnancy. We tended everything, made sure that when she got there, there was two chairs that way we could be up and blah, blah, blah. I was afraid that she was going to back out and end up with emergency appendicitis or something, because what she did, she had an emergency C-section. I missed the birth. But I did get to have the gift of holding this little squirming little girl. She was just, I mean, she was all crunched up and folded up hours after she was born. And when I was out there, you wouldn't have let me know your kids. You wouldn't have wanted me in your house. And you wouldn't have let me know when you were having a baby. Because you wouldn't want me around. So, welcome to Rooms Above All the Zones.